Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is Derek Humphrey. Humphrey is a journalist and author who has spent more than 30 years campaigning for lawful physician-assisted suicide as an option for the terminally ill. He started his campaign in 1975 after the death of his first wife, Jean, from bone cancer, which had become so unbearable to her that she took her own life with his help. He went on to write a book about this experience called Jean's Way, which caused a worldwide sensation in the late 1970s. Humphrey founded the Hemlock Society in 1980, and in 1991, his book, which was startling and controversial at the time, called Final Exit, The Practicalities of Self-Deliverance and Assisted Suicide, became a New York Times bestseller and is now in its third edition, available in paperback from Dell Publishing. I'm speaking to Derek Humphrey by phone from his home in Eugene, Oregon. Derek Humphrey, thank you for joining me. I want to begin with your journey as a campaigner for lawful physician-assisted suicide for terminally ill people, which began in 1975 when your first wife, Jean, was dying a painful death from cancer. Tell us about the landscape in that time.
Yes, the right-to-die issue in Western countries, America or Britain or so, was not a big issue at the time. Few intellectual people knew about it and thought about it, but it was not a public issue. It developed in 1976 when there was the Nancy Cruzan case in New Jersey, which was the young woman who was virtually brain dead, but not actually brain dead. And it was the first time the case was widely reported. There was a court case over whether she should be allowed to die or not. And this was the first time the public had realized how far modern medicine had gone, that you could keep alive a person who would previously have died in the normal course of events. And that Nancy Cruzan case had a shock wave throughout the Western world. Suddenly we knew just how far modern medicine had got. So that was the thing. In 1975, I'd helped my first wife to die at her request. She had terminal metastasized cancer, and it was her idea. She said, "I want you to help me to die." And I said, "How?" Because it was news to me, you know, a new venture to me. And she said, "Go and get some lethal pills from a doctor, and when I want to die, I want to end my life immediately." I did get the pills from a friendly doctor, and some months later, she did choose to take her life. In 1978, I published a little book. I am a professional author, writer all my life.
Yes, I know.
I published a little book about it called Jean's Way, and to my surprise, everybody's surprise, it became a bestseller and sold in many languages throughout the world. The book described Jean's life, her suffering, and her choice in dying. And that book aroused so much controversy that I was asked to speak and on television and radio and public meetings and debating things at universities in America, Canada, Britain, Australia. And I got sort of caught up in the big issue of a person's right to choose to die.
Mm-hmm. How did Jean's family react to you writing that book? Because it was quite controversial at the time because you were so open about having helped her.
Yes, it was the first book of its kind where somebody admitted to this. And of course, assisting a suicide is a crime. This happened in Britain when I lived in Britain way back. I lived in America. I'm an American citizen now. It caused a lot of controversy. Some people loved the book. Some people hated it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the nature of this issue.
So this was all new to you. So you had to find out just how difficult it is to try to help somebody die. And so you founded the Hemlock Society. To tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, 5 years after Jean's death, there was so much pressure on me to talk about this and explain about this, and people were asking what were the drugs that Jean used and how did you get them and where can I get them, and I was deluged with hundreds of inquiries. By then I'd moved to America to work for the Los Angeles Times, but under this avalanche of inquiries and people of interest, I decided to start an organization to deal with it in a sensible and legal and thoughtful manner and plan for legislation in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So I founded the Hemlock Society when I lived in Santa Monica in 1980.
Mm-hmm. And I understand you started this organization out of your garage.
Yes. Yeah, I just was living in a small house in Santa Monica, had a large garage, so I turned that into the Hemlock office, and for the first year or so, I ran the Hemlock Society from there, and it gradually built into a national organization. It was gathering, you know, a couple of thousand members a year, and we were selling books and how-to books. And we were drafting model legislation for the future and began to introduce this into legislatures.
Mm-hmm. And how was it getting doctors on board? Were you able to do so?
Yes, some. Mainly retired doctors, because they hadn't anything to lose, in a sense, and they had a lot of experience. We were not made up of doctors, but we always had a fair number of willing retired doctors to advise us and help us and be on our board and so forth.
Mm-hmm. And was it doctors that you used in order to be able to convey to people lethal doses?
Well, I'm an investigative reporter of quite long experience, the Sunday Times in London and the Los Angeles Times. So I put together literature by investigation. I talked to doctors, I talked to pharmacists, I talked to people whose loved ones had taken their lives. They were willing, because of who I am and what I'd done with Jean's Way and so forth, people were very willing to talk to me and trust me, even with things that could not be made public. So I wrote a book called Let Me Die Before I Wake, which explained how to take your life if you needed to when terminally ill.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And through the years, has the pushback against this whole idea been mainly from people with religious beliefs? Who has been the party of people who've been most against this?
The main opposition to this, and it was expected and understand, is from the Roman Catholic Church,
mm-hmm.
and from evangelicals and deeply Christian people who believe that only God gives life and only God takes it away. That's their belief, and I respect it. And I say to them, well, you know, go your way, my friend, and let us go our way. But of course, the law is against us, and so we've had to fight over the years to bit by bit change the laws.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So there's a genuine difference of opinion, but I think we should live with each other and make our personal choices according to our beliefs.
Mm-hmm. And I think that has been the case through the years.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's talk about your 1991 book that really is an incredibly important book, Final Exit. Tell us about how this was received and how this really, in many ways, has changed your life.
Yes, but by 1991, I was still head of the Hemlock Society, and I realized we need that times had changed over the past 12 years, and the public needed a better book, a more direct book, a more knowledgeable book. So I sat down and wrote Final Exit, and this is the ultimate how-to book,
mm-hmm.
how to end your life in a decent, peaceful manner.
Mm-hmm.
And when it came out, to my surprise, nobody would publish it. I had to publish it myself in a hardback. I got it distributed through a proper trade distribution. And it shot to the top of the New York Times bestseller list.
Isn't that amazing?
18 weeks on the New York Times bestseller list. And it remains in print today. I think they're printing off a new issue this month. So after almost 20 years, it's still selling steadily, consistently. And it's also been published in 12 languages all over the world. It's in most libraries in the world, this book, Final Exit.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. It's a very important book to have out there for people. Can you tell us just a little bit of what you would recommend to those contemplating self-deliverance before making this decision, just some key points?
Yes, well, make very sure that you are close to death, you know, that you're not mistaken, or that the drugs aren't clouding your vision. So talk to your doctor, talk to people close to you, whom you trust and love, and say that you're coming to the end, you're thinking about hastening the end, and hear their reactions. Probably read my book so as to get an overall view of the law, the ethics. And it's a very straightforward, simple book. I'm not an academic. Mm-hmm. And the methods of how to end your life, different methods, are carefully described and illustrated in Final Exit.
Yeah, it's quite startling to see some of those descriptions of how to kill yourself.
Yes. But don't forget, the book is a book of love as well.
It deals
with double suicide. It deals with what you tell your family. There's lots of preparation and thought a thoughtful person will use, and there's suggestions in the book as to what to consider and what to do before you come to the lethal part of it.
Yeah, one of the things that you emphasize is having somebody with you, if possible, a close friend, a family member. Tell us why you think that is so very important.
Well, you know, the telephone might ring or somebody might come to the door at the time when the person is actually beginning the process of taking their life. There could be an interruption. It's good to have moral support at this time. Some people choose to do it alone. You know, it's a very personal decision according to your personality and your thoughts. Mm-hmm. But I recommend that there be a person present, not actually helping, so they don't get in trouble with the law. It is best to have somebody present. Things can fall over. I know one case where the man was alone. His wife left the house knowing what he was going to do. And he knocked the bottle of pills over and didn't take them all. And it took a long time to die until she came back and discovered a lot of the pills scattered around and so forth. So things can go wrong. But of course, ideally, what we've managed to achieve in Oregon and Washington is medically assisted suicide for the dying, the Right to Die movement, which I've spurred. I haven't done it all myself, of course. Great teams of wonderful people have done this over the years, but we have, since 1998, we've had physician assisted suicide in Oregon. And since last year, assisted suicide in Washington state. And in a recent court case, it's been approved in Montana. So we're, step by step, we're making progress so that ideally a person, a loved one, shouldn't be doing this or helping this. It should be done by a willing doctor with documentation and proper procedures, and we've got that going in Oregon and Washington.
Yeah, it's finally about time. Now, I know physician-assisted suicide has been legal in several countries like the Netherlands and Switzerland. Have we learned a lot from that, having been a precedent in regard to what we're doing in Washington and Oregon and now Montana? Did they make many mistakes?
Netherlands have made the running on this for many years, although they didn't legalize it until after Oregon, but they permitted it for 10 or 15 years beforehand. Mm-hmm. And yes, we learned a lot from them about the ethics, about the medicines, ways not to do it, and so forth. So yes, there's a knowledge about this subject of assisted dying has been shared and is being shared.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Derek Humphrey. We're talking about his book, Final Exit, The Practicalities of Self-Deliverance and Assisted Suicide. Derek, let's talk about your concerns when it comes to euthanasia in regard to severely depressed and severely disabled people. Now, you encourage severely depressed people to get help before they take this final step, correct?
Oh, yes, yes. And as in the laws in Oregon and Washington, a clinically depressed person cannot get help. They must either be quietly turned away or they must be treated. And if that clinical depression goes and they still wish to die because of their terminal illness, You cannot get, in the Oregon Washington laws, you cannot get doctor-assisted dying on the grounds of old age, or handicap, or clinical depression. Mm-hmm. It would be, it's against the law to help such people. The person has to be in a terminal condition and close to death.
I noticed you talked about in your book about euthanasia and the severely disabled and how often it calls up the thought of Nazis and their mission of getting rid of so-called people with defects.
Yes.
So talk to us more about that.
Yes,
you have a whole chapter on that.
I don't approve of assisting disabled people to die at all. I mean, some of the extreme right wing say that it's a great danger to disabled people, but it isn't, because it would be against the law. It would be unethical. Disabled people need all the help in the world to continue their living, and by far the greatest majority do. But if a disabled person was also terminally ill, with cancer or similar, then they would qualify for help, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
But disability alone or depression alone, in my view, both ethically and legally, does not qualify.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, you're somebody who also believes in people using hospice care.
Oh, yes.
To talk to us more about that, when would somebody graduate from hospice care toward wanting to commit suicide, in your opinion?
Yes, well, hospice care does take care of the vast majority of terminally ill patients.
Mm-hmm.
They do a wonderful job,
mm-hmm,
and help people and soothe them. But they're not the perfect answer. Nothing is the perfect answer. Mine is not the perfect answer. And in fact, if you want to statistically bear this out, the statistics gathered by the government, local government, show that 80% of people who use the Oregon law are also in hospice.
Really?
Yeah, that's the figures that have been coming out year after year. So, I mean, hospice does mostly good, but it is not 100%, as shown by some people in hospice still wish to have a doctor help them to die.
Mm-hmm. And do people in hospice care end up having to leave hospice care in a state where it's not legal to euthanize themselves?
Oh, yes, mm-hmm, yes. It really can't be done in hospital. But most hospice care in America is home hospice,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
visiting doctors and nurses, doing an excellent job of looking after people and to their utmost ability. But there are many, many cases where people are at home, and when hospice is there, if they so choose, they end their lives.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's a matter of personal choice.
Oh, indeed, indeed.
But hospice, in the main, helps people to die peacefully.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Then I want to ask you this. In your opinion, has someone like Dr. Jack Kevorkian, who obviously has brought such attention to this issue, has he helped or hurt the cause?
Well, it's debatable. I think in the public sense, he's helped it. More people are aware of right to choose to die and ending your own life and or getting help than were previously. His because he had this suicide machine. Here was a doctor with a suicide machine who killed patients. I mean, the media just went bananas over it.
Mm-hmm,
I mean,
mm-hmm,
unheard of. So in the public sense, because it made the public aware of this issue and this outlet. In the medical sense, I think it was harmful. Most doctors were appalled at Dr. Kevorkian, the fact that, you know, you could fly to Michigan and go to Kevorkian one day and he would look at your papers and look at you and help you to die that day. And then the family would fly home. It was too hasty for medical people who want a bit more time to consider the issues.
Mm-hmm.
And in that sense, the medical profession turned against him, but the public supported him very greatly.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the public in general supports the issue.
Yes.
And then they mix the issue with Dr. Kevorkian in some ways.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Have you had a dialogue with him since you're both in the same business of wanting to make this legal?
No, I'm afraid we fell out in 1978. Before he'd started his, not 78, 88, me a long time ago. In 1988, as he was about to start his campaign, he approached me when I was head of the Hemlock Society and said that he was going to start a suicide clinic, and he wanted Hemlock to send him clients and do it that way. That repulsed me.
Mm.
I think this is something you don't have a clinic to do. Something that's done in home, quietly, hopefully within the law, hopefully by a doctor, in a quiet manner, but not standalone clinics with doctors in white coats and people driving up in taxis to have their lives ended.
Yeah.
That is science fiction. That's out of this. So when I said, no, I'm sorry, I can't cooperate on that because I don't believe in it, he got very angry with me, marched out, and has never spoken to me since.
That's a shame. That's a shame.
No,
but what he does
I've still
sound
supported
like,
him, and
yeah,
I've sent money to his defense fund when he was on trial and so forth. But he's not a forgiving person.
Now, people often feared that when the right to die was going to be sanctioned by states and countries, that some people would use it to get rid of people for their money and get rid of granny because they're in her will. How have we safeguarded against such actions?
Well, mainly by passing laws, of course. And the fact that the issue is now so open in public debate and thought, thanks to Kevorkian and my book Final Exit, it's not a secretive issue any longer. So if there was any hanky-panky, it would be more likely to come out. People would speak out about it now. But ideally, everywhere, in my view, needs to follow the suit of the Netherlands and Belgium, Switzerland, Oregon, Washington, and pass laws with guidelines as to how this shall happen, who may get euthanasia and who may not.
Mm-hmm.
And what the roadmap is, I would like to trash Final Exit, the book. I mean, that it was no longer necessary. And that day will come.
Yes, I think it will.
When the book falls into disuse.
I think we're heading that way quite rapidly. Now, are you dismayed by some of the dialogue that's going on in this country in regard to the healthcare arguments and people talking about death panels? Is that segueing into the issue that you're in?
That's a non-issue. I mean, all that was proposed by the healthcare legislation was that a person could talk to their doctor, and that the doctor would be paid for this consultation, as to how they wish to die at home, in hospice, in hospital, if they wanted life support taken off. So the doctor your own doctor would have some idea of how to deal with the inevitable issue the patient will die. And it was just common sense to have some, but it did not include euthanasia or assisted suicide. That was not included in it. It was just the wishes for care in hospital, home, hospice, on life support or not, and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was used for political reasons.
But it became a political football.
Indeed, it did. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now you started a small nonprofit called the Euthanasia Research and Guidance Organization a number of years ago. To tell us a little bit about its mission.
Well, it's a very small organization and mainly concerned with distributing literature about this, printing books about it and pamphlets, and giving advice to people. A lot of people call me or email me with they are approaching their death or their loved one's death is coming, and they want advice on a certain point or so forth. So it's a sort of informative organization. More important is the Final Exit Network, which is an organization which succeeded the Hemlocks. The Hemlock Society is gone, got merged with another organization. But there is now the Final Exit Network. I'm on the advisory board, not on the board, but I'm an advisor to them. And they use the name of my book for their organization, with my permission.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
they give guidance to people on who wish to end their lives because of terminal illness.
Mm-hmm. I was just going to bring that up. There's been some recent publicity, and specifically in Newsweek magazine, about this organization. And
yes.
They're calling the director, Dr. Lawrence Egbert, the new Dr. Death. How are you responding to this?
Yes, of course, that's anybody who, if I was a doctor, they'd call me Dr. Death, and it's just a journalistic label they love to slap on people. He was the medical director of the Final Exit Network, but a case in Atlanta has caused him to be charged with assisted suicide, along with three other people who were involved in a person's death in Atlanta. So he's no longer a medical director, but he's still with the organization. And there was an interview in Newsweek on the web this week.
Yes, I saw that. Mm-hmm. Mm. How do you think the fact that he's going to be on trial is going to affect the issue in general?
Well, I mean, I didn't want them to get into trouble, I've raised money to help defend them. But I welcome the fight. Let's get to it in the courts. Let's get a clarification of whether it's right to advise and be in the presence of somebody who is taking their life because of terminal illness.
Mm-hmm.
I think this could turn out to be a very significant case. So, having got here, I welcome it being fought out in the courts.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, Derek, we only have a couple minutes left. You've been involved with this issue for over 30 years. Do you ever think enough, I just want to go live my life and no longer contemplate this issue?
No, that's never occurred to me. I didn't get into this issue until I was, past 50. I'm 80 next month.
Well, congratulations.
It strikes me as such an important issue that myself and others need to address this. And the right to die is all about life and love and law and ethics and religion. And it's a fascinating issue when you look into it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've written four books about it, the history of it, going back to ancient Greek and Roman times up to today. I've written two how-to books on it. And I just find myself a sort of guru on the subject.
Yes, you are.
I didn't mean that. I didn't plan it, but it evolved.
Well, I think we're lucky that you did stick with this issue. You've done a great job to help us all. Now, can you give some contact information if anybody wants to get in touch or get a copy of your book?
Yes, you can get it on the web, but you can get it at my website is very simple. FinalExit.org. And the Final Exit Network is FinalExitNetwork.org. All one word, of course.
Uh-huh. And
so that's how you can easily contact us.
Well, that's great. Well, Derek Humphrey, thank you so much for joining us, and thank you for all the work you've done on this. You've done a great service to humankind, if you ask me. Thank you so much.
Yes, it's been very rewarding, and I'll help as long as I can. Thank you.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. If you'd like to make a tax-deductible donation in support of the Out of Bounds radio show, please contact our fiscal sponsor, the Arts of the Southern Finger Lakes, at earts.org. That's earts.org. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. We'll be back next week. I'm Tish Perlman.